4, Section 2, Georgia's Economic, Educational, and Religious Development. As you read, look for the rebirth of Georgia's economy after the war, education and religion in Georgia after the war, terms, credit, tuition. The rebuilding of Georgia's economy happened as small farmers and large planters grew their crops, craftsmen made their goods, and merchants established trade relations with other states and other countries. A new emphasis on education emerged in the states, including Georgia, as citizens faced the prospect of governing themselves. Founding educational institutions was more difficult in Georgia and other southern states because the population was generally spread out on farms. Georgia did, however, make the effort to have schools in towns. It led the nation in chartering a college. The rural nature of Georgia was also a challenge for religious institutions, but one that churches worked hard to overcome. Pre-war religious groups reorganized, and new religious movements came to the state. While much of this economic, educational, and religious building and rebuilding was still in early stages by the end of the Confederation period, the foundation was laid for more growth in the 1790s and early 1800s. The economy in Georgia. As in the colonial period, what people did with their land depended on which part of the state they settled. In the coastal area, rice culture slowly came back. Because rice took so much labor and many slaves had left, there was a shortage of labor in the early years after the war. The slave trade increased in spite of high prices for slaves and the shortage of money. Many planters bought slaves on credit from Savannah merchants. That is, they bought slaves and paid for them over time. Several hundred slaves a year were brought to Georgia for sale in the 1780s. Rice planters also had to rebuild the irrigation, watering systems that allowed them to flood their rice fields at the proper time. The cultivation of indigo came back, but it was not as important as it had been before the war. In the coastal area, planters from Barbados introduced Sea Island cotton, a variety of cotton with long fibers. It became a cash crop on some island plantations, but the amount grown was small. The main cash crop was tobacco, which had been grown in Virginia and North Carolina since early in the colonial period. As farmers from those states moved to Georgia, they brought their knowledge of tobacco cultivation with them. A farmer and his family could grow a few acres of tobacco. Those who owned slaves could grow a much larger quantity. Tobacco brought the gradual development of more plantations and slavery to the areas beyond the rice lands of the coast. Augusta became an important center for the tobacco trade as farmers rolled their tobacco in barrels along winding tobacco roads or floated their crop down the river in shallow boats. Most of the farmers moving into the interior of Georgia raised cattle, hogs, and chickens, and grew food crops like wheat, corn, and vegetables. What they did not eat themselves or feed to their animals, they sold in local markets. In Georgia's towns, trade and craftsmanship reemerged after the war. In the city of Savannah and the larger towns, such as Augusta, settlers could find more than just the basics. In Savannah, the only area large enough to be called a city, merchants began to reestablish trade routes beyond the state, including trade ties with British merchants and with other countries. Education in Georgia. After the war, Georgians, like citizens of other states, became concerned about education, especially for white men. If ordinary citizens would be voting, they needed to be able to read and make informed decisions. Some men had to be educated for public service in government positions, including the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of the state's government. This concern for education was evident as early as the Constitution of 1777, which said that each county should have a school paid for from state funds. The war had prevented that from happening. Even after the war, county schools remained more of a goal than an accomplished fact. In 1783, however, the Assembly established special commissions in Burke, Richmond, and Wilkes counties to, among other things, set up and oversee schools. The Academy of Richmond County, the first in the state, was chartered in 1783 and held its first classes in Augusta in 1785. Academies were like today's high schools. Wilkes County followed in 1786 with Wilkes Academy in the new town of Washington, one of many towns named for George Washington in the young country. Chatham Academy in Savannah was established in 1788. Liberty and Glenn Academies were planned at this time, but did not open until 1789. The dream of free public education for the state's children was still that, a dream, at this time. Farm children lived in the country far from schools. They were needed as workers for their family survival. Parents taught their children what parents thought they needed to know in life. Boys learned farming. Girls learned cooking, sewing, and other skills needed to maintain a home. Even in towns, public schools were not free. The counties provided the land for the schools, but parents had to pay to send their children there. For example, the Academy of Richmond County charged tuition, a fee for instruction, based on which stage of education a student was studying. First stage included letters, spelling, and reading, and cost $4 a quarter. It was decades before the state of Georgia set aside money for a free school fund. Most of Georgia's education remained private. Teachers advertised in towns, and wealthy planters continued to hire tutors to live on their plantations and teach their children. Before the Revolution, colleges had been private. With the exception of the College of Philadelphia, now the University of Pennsylvania, colleges had been founded by religious denominations. The only college in the South before the Revolution was William and Mary College in Virginia, which had been established by the Anglican Church. In 1785, the state of Georgia chartered what became the University of Georgia, the nation's first state-supported university. The university had no religious affiliation. Its purpose was to educate leaders for the state, whatever their religious affiliation. For the rest of the Confederation period, the university remained an idea and plan, not yet a reality. It took 16 years before the university held its first classes. Georgians who were educated did have access to books and newspapers. After the war, Loyalist newspaperman James Johnston was allowed to return to Georgia. The state needed a printer and a newspaper. By 1783, he was publishing what was now called the Gazette of the State of Georgia. The paper brought news of Georgia and the world to the state's citizens, as well as advertising the goods and services available. In 1786, Augusta, the capital of the state, also had a newspaper, the Augusta Chronicle. Still published, it is the oldest continuous newspaper in the South. Religion in Georgia. The Revolution had been hard on Georgia's religious denominations. The Anglican clergy in Georgia, along with the Lutheran minister at Ebenezer, were all loyalist and eventually left the state. The British captured the young patriot Congregationalist minister at Midway, and he died as a prisoner of war. The meeting house style church building of the Midway Congregationalist was burned before the invasion of Savannah in 1779. St. Paul's Anglican Church in Augusta was also destroyed by the war, as were other churches. Over the next few years, old churches were rebuilt and new churches built. The Constitution of 1777 stated that the Anglican Church was no longer the government-sponsored religion. After the war, the former Anglican separated from the Church of England and founded the Episcopal Church. The new denomination kept most of the rituals and religious beliefs of the Anglican Church. Other pre-war religions remained. Jews in Savannah continued to meet in each other's homes, while the Congregationalists rebuilt in Midway. Lutherans met in the Jerusalem Church in Ebenezer, which had survived the war in spite of being used by British soldiers. The Baptists founded several churches throughout the backcountry in the 1770s and 1780s. The Methodists had begun in England as a group within the Anglican Church. After the Revolutionary War, the American Methodists wanted to become a separate denomination. Thus, they became the Methodist Episcopal Church. By 1785, the Methodists sent Beverly Allen to the state as a missionary. The Methodists held their first conference in Georgia in 1788, which established a firm foundation for the church's later growth in the state. Both Baptist and Methodist churches grew quickly in the rural frontier areas of the state. The Baptist belief that each congregation should operate separately and that lay people had great authority in the church made it possible for backcountry settlers to form their own churches. The Methodists did not believe in totally independent congregations. Instead, they thought that the congregations had connections to each other through districts and conferences. They served rural areas by having ministers who rode circuits, going from church to church on one trip. Georgia's other main religion was Presbyterian. The number of Presbyterian churches also increased in post-war Georgia, especially as Scots-Irish Presbyterians moved into the new lands. Slaves in towns sometimes worshipped in the same churches as their owners. In 1782, Andrew Bryan, a slave of wealthy planter Jonathan Bryan, was baptized and began preaching to the African-American community of Savannah. In 1788, the Reverend Abraham Marshall, son of Baptist minister David Marshall, officially ordained Andrew Bryan as a Baptist minister, and the first Bryan Baptist Church was organized. In 1793, Andrew Bryan purchased his freedom. With the help of prominent whites, including his former owner, Bryan and his congregation built the first church building, which was completed in 1795 in Savannah. Before the Revolution, the Baptists had established a church on the plantation of Indian trader George Galvin at Silver Bluff in South Carolina. In 1787, the black members of that church moved to an area on the western edge of Augusta called Springfield. They renamed their congregation Springfield Baptist Church. The first Bryan Baptist and Springfield Baptist churches are Georgia's oldest independent black churches. Many Georgians were not affiliated with an organized religion. Living far away from the nearest church, what faith they had was practiced privately. Later in the 1790s, a religious revival increased the number of churches, and methods such as camp meetings made religious participation possible for more people. Reviewing the section. 1. Define credit, tuition. 2. What was the first state-supported university chartered in the United States? 3. What new religious denomination came to Georgia after the war? 4.